And welcome to Health Tech Matters. Today our guest is Dan Kanger, VP of Design at Hims & Hers. Dan is ex-creative director at Gene Lane and Patterns and a new dad. Welcome to the podcast, Dan. So first of all, you have such an interesting story, Dan. You've been working for 9 years in creative studio, and after that you decided to join Hims & Hers as a creative lead.
I spent a decade at the company, and it was more of a natural progression to go to Hims & Hers. In 2017, Hims launched, came to market in about November, and my team at Gene Lane, we were working with Andrew on the look, the feel, the website, the copy, the photography, and then launching in November 2017, and it just, you know, skyrocketed in terms of like demand and product and the vibe work. It was at a particular time that it was still an industry that the D2C playbook, you could disrupt it with simple design while all the competitors looked very old school pharmaceutical. So it was a mixture of all that with a very solid business model that like catapulted it out the door. And then my team stayed on to do all the marketing and a lot of the digital work. And then we worked with Andrew and other executive members to launch Hers in 2018, which same exercise, logo, photo shoot, copy, website, vibe, and launch that to market. And then, now being in-house, it's really about like evolving the brand and pushing the brands and strategically getting smarter and iterating and really like using that strong foundation that we've developed, really building on that for now, thinking a little bit more strategically, long-term. Yeah.
A question out of scope. You're using standing desk?
To stand all day. It just allows me to just move. And as I ramble, it's kind of nice. And I'm always getting things and talking and grabbing things. I have all the products here. So I'm always just trying to...
Interesting. I tried it once and it was so painful. I mean...
Yeah, I have like funny slipper shoes that are comfy, that are different. So like I have like all, like my shoes that I wear in here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see. And are you not tired standing?
No, I think I'm used to it by now. I've been doing it since the pandemic. So since like a year and a half now.
It's good for back, yeah.
It also stretch, yeah, I like it a lot.
Yeah, I should try. Yeah, previously I tried it, but the point is that you are so tired in an hour that you can't even think of anything but when I will sit down finally. So you are a hero. Speaking about the launch of Hims, it's interesting that they decided to outsource it to a creative agency.
Yeah. And I think it worked for that stage of the company. In my previous life at Gene Lane, the agency had a good product market fit. We were serving a time in history where founders needed to launch to market in a particular vibe and emotion and storytelling. And we got very good at that. So it made sense for founders that are venture backed, that have X amount of dollars, the price that we were charging, the value that we were giving, I think really was compelling, especially to founders that value design and they wanted a partner. We clearly were working with founders who value design and really wanted that to be a differentiator. And Andrew was one of those individuals. And I think that's the root of Andrew, the CEO. And I think that's the root of share those same values and now being in-house at Hims & Hers, like shepherding those and having design at the table.
Yeah. So right now, his brand is already like 4 years old.
4 years old. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is correct. Will be for this October, November.
Okay, yeah. I see. So it's quite mature.
You know, in like dog years or startup years, it is definitely, it feels mature, but it's still very young. I think we're in the early innings of the company and it's a good position to be able to think long-term, think strategically, and be able to invest in the company, the team, and the products.
Why I was asking is that it's quite often that on the early stages, startups have a specific brand and in a year, in 2 years, they go through major rebranding because they understand the audience better, or maybe they shape their products in a different way. Maybe they add more products and so on. And from this standpoint, it's quite unique that the branding is more or less the same as it was a few years ago.
Yeah, the word branding it's a very wide word. It's multiple touch points. It's how the brand feels. It's how it talks. It's how it looks. As a brand matures, yes, they start to understand their customer base, what resonates with them. I think if your brand has the DNA where there's things that customers like about you, then you can like build upon that. And I think that's something that we've tried to do at Hims & Hers. If you look at like forhers.com most recently, we've really been positioning her strategically with its own vibe, its own persona, its own tone. Because like you said, we've like got to understand the customer better, what they want. But we've also like evolved our POV. We understand our products better. So there's ways to evolve without doing a 180 because there's still customers that you have. And I think that's like, if you have an in-house team that can iterate, that can move, well, that's the power of having an in-house team.
Okay, I see. When you were launching Hers, it was a different brand, meaning that it's different website, different everything.
Yeah, it's a completely different brand for Hers.com. It's own photography. It was very inspired by him. So it was like a brother and sister. Now that the brands have matured, I think more and more we're trying to develop the essence of each. As we know the customer and as we grow with the customer and as our product offerings start to evolve, we have the ability to evolve the visual language as well with it.
And at the same time, they are still separate. But what was the intention to keep them separate? Because they could be like for them and just was to separate sections.
Yeah, that's an ongoing strategy and conversation that we're actively thinking about. I think in 2018, the world was a different place and we were trying to come out with products for our customer base. We wanted to address that customer base. So yeah, it made, you know, a lot of sense at the time.
Okay. And switching gears a bit, right now your role is VP of design, right? What do you do at work?
Yeah, very cool. What do I do? So I guess basically me and my team are in charge of the look and feel of the brand of Hims and Hers. I run the team that works horizontally throughout the company, like that shepherds design and design thinking throughout horizontally at the company. So my team has various different types of designers that work, you know, cross-functionally with different teams along the company.
It's interesting that you mentioned that the structure is horizontal.
It's purposely been that way intentionally because I think design, and one of the things I love about design and design at Hims and Hers is it's just that we're a design-centric brand, design is in the DNA, and design stands as its own entity alongside marketing, alongside product. And I think that allows us to then work horizontally with the different aspects of the company, but still create culturally a place where all designers can grow.
How many people in the design team right now?
The design team is 19 people currently.
Uh-huh, okay. So the structure inside the design team, is it horizontal, vertical?
Yeah, it's the way I like to talk about it. It's a bunch of small, it's about like six teams of three. So different types of disciplines of design, brand design, digital product design, packaging design, and they work. So they're very small, agile teams that are empowered to own those domain areas. And that's where we are as a company right now, being 3 years old. It is very horizontally as we start to grow and as we start to see how the business needs and evolves. Ethos is trying to keep a very flat structure, trying to empower people, people can be accountable, make their own decisions. So it's very, a flat structure gets that.
These teams are formed around specific functions. So they can serve specific project fully. If you are launching any new line, you have a brand designer, packaging designer, and product designer in one team. So these teams are serving specific new projects.
Yeah, I think we have sections, I'll say, like brand design is a section. But within that, there's like two or three types of designers in, you know, art directors, brand designers within that. And they work on projects cross-functionally with other departments, with marketing, product marketing, growth, operations, things like that. We verticalize around our core business categories, which are hair, sexual health, skin, and mental health. So we'll have designers that focus on hair or designers that focus on skin, and they'll work across different aspects, maybe the digital aspect of skin or maybe the paid marketing aspect of skin. But that's a concept that we have, because if you're on skin, there's engineers assigned to skin. There's a product owner assigned to skin. You can work cross-functionally that way.
And what does it help you to achieve in this way, this structure?
I think it empowers the designer to be waving the flag of design cross-functionally. And it creates like these little autonomous units that they make the decisions on for the skin business. But it's, as a design team and full of designers, it's our job to make sure that design is upheld within that cross-functional team. And they're able to do that, but they also have the support system of a larger design team. Other designers within their section, if you will.
Okay, right, I see. So when you decided to join Hims and Hers, did they have VP of design before you?
They didn't. They had an alternate structure that I'm not familiar with, but they did not have it at the time.
So how do you feel like when companies need this role?
Yeah, it's definitely like you need this role when you've made a conscious decision to use design as a competitive advantage for your company. I think that's a key decision. Like when a company values like user-centric, putting the user first, it's also more tactically when a company wants to wield and yield and grow an internal design team, because you want to start leveraging the benefits of, you can have an internal design team that can work with other members of your company. I think that's a conscious decision when you want to do that, because you could also just use an agency. You see a lot of models where there's like some companies that like choose not to build an internal team, and they, you know, will use an agency for a lot of that. So I think having, if you don't make that conscious decision, then a VP design is very helpful. I think tactically, it's for companies that haven't found product market fit yet. That's usually companies that are like negative 1 to like 2 years old sometimes. If your company is like still struggling to find product market fit, I don't necessarily think that investing and growing and scaling a world-class design team might be the number one priority. I think like if you're struggling to find something that consumers absolutely love and absolutely need, then it's a bit more of a nuanced, holistic problem. There could be other facets there. I don't think design can save everything. Once a company's found product market fit and they feel like, okay, cool, we're selling, so then we can start like growing and investing. That's a time.
Mm-hmm. That's super interesting topic, decision making. I'm just reading a book about decision making in Netflix. So it depends on the company. So for example, in Netflix, person who is not a director, who is not a manager, he can make a decision and act on it, and he doesn't need an approval from a manager. Does this work like this in Hims?
Yeah, no, I think it works exactly like that, because people that are on the team that are making the decisions, there's no approval needed per se, but a lot of decisions are not unilateral decisions, even by no matter who they're made. So people are empowered to make decisions and sign off on things, but they're also updating and talking with the people that's going to affect and getting the buy-in and things like that. It's 100% similar in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to decision making, it's very like disseminated in the sense that a lot of work is done in small cross-functional teams. If the team is small and empowered and solving the problem, they usually will naturally come to a consensus. That natural way to get a consensus is usually by like building empathy and talking with each other and using the constraints to get to the best possible answer. So I think a lot of times like decisions are pretty empowered throughout the teams. So yeah.
And how do you empower people to make these decisions apart from team communication, obviously?
I think it's a lot about trusting the team and trusting and also being understanding of like what your role is with them, in the sense of to push the work, to help give them context, to help set each individual up to do the best work that they can. So I think that's a good part of it.
And how do you translate ideas that are communicated on the top level? Because obviously there are some concepts that are discussed between only C-level managers, and they somehow have to be communicated.
Yeah, I try to be just radically transparent. Tactically speaking, as an entire creative team, we get together twice a week. And I'm a big fan of osmosis. I'm a big fan of showing work early and often. And I'm a huge proponent of protecting new ideas. So meeting together every 2 weeks, twice a week on Mondays and Wednesdays, if something's like hot and heavy, we'll talk about it. If I hear something, that's usually the venue. And then Wednesdays are a little bit more of show and tell of work and seeing visually what other people are working on, so that people can start to connect dots and start to be empowered to be like, oh, I got an idea from this, I want to do that type of thing.
That's very curious. Let's dive deeper into this routines, into these meetings.
The two meetings that we do a week are, the first one is like a weekly status, which we just go through the projects, and it's more of a venue of, okay, this is what's hot for the week. Like, anyone speak now? Anyone need anything? Anything crazy? That's a little bit more tactical. And then Wednesday, we spend half the time showing work, and then we spend usually the other half the time of it just sharing links or inspiration or just anything relevant. And on the front end, when we're showing the work, I wouldn't say it's as structured as a critique. I would say the majority of the critiques come from people showing their similar type designers. So those are like more tactical critiques come from. This is people will give feedback, and a lot of times things are shown to get a broad, like, yo, is this cool? Is this not? Like, it's a very safe place to get a 20 person gut check. But I think the way I see the main function is really to highlight, showcase, and just show everyone's amazing work. People can start to see like, oh, these are the ads that are going to those landing pages, that are going to that quiz, and they can start to see, and then they'll hopefully, then it fosters communication so that they start talking and collaborating. It's a very simple mechanic, but it really creates a shared sense of what getting people to talk to each other in a natural way. It's also inspiring too, just seeing packaging if you're doing digital, and sometimes you'll see some work and it's like super inspiring and you're like, oh my God.
Do you set up rules, maybe time constraints for these meetings, maybe agenda?
I prep for it in a way that, since I know a lot of what's cooking and what the teams are working on, I'm usually the one that's like, okay, hey, let's show this, or hey, could you show that? Or, but I try to keep the agenda very loose. And a lot of times in the meeting, especially for the second half of the meeting, a lot of times like people will just start pasting links as we're talking, type of thing. Oh, like this is a conference or a new album, or check out this article on architecture, like just like whatever people are finding on the Twitterverse.
Yeah. One of the biggest problems that I stumbled upon is that some meetings are way too long.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also very, I've set the precedent with the meeting of like, if we don't have something to talk about, like we'll end early. And I kind of honest about that, because I feel like I'm more about rituals and habits and like less like a rigid process, but more like good fundamentals, getting together Wednesday. Even when sometimes we've done, it's been 20 minutes and we blocked off and then people get their time back and some people go to lunch. Those days are nice, as well as when some days we go an hour, we go like the full time and we're like, whoa, like we need more time. I'm very open of like, okay, we can end it early if you don't have stuff. But I do think it's nice just to build a habit of, okay, everyone see the face, we're all remote, just say what up. And I think there's value even just like showing one thing, just so people are aware.
And speaking about your routines and in team, yeah, habits, as you mentioned them, do you have any others that are interesting?
There's the process, habits, and rituals, you know, that we do as a creative team, which is the Mondays and Wednesdays. You know, other like rituals are, I'm very conscious of always pushing everyone to own their calendar so they have working time and meeting time, things like that. But I try to keep the process at a minimum and focus on the people and making sure the work quality is good, and then the rest works out.
Mm-hmm. Do you have routines that help you to stay on track on what's happening? Maybe daily reports, maybe weekly reports, I don't know.
No, when it comes to projects, like staying up to date, how to track progress of a project. I would say that progress of a project, they're done horizontally, and that like design is hopefully a part of every single project at the company. So there's other departments that are responsible for communicating process or progress and where we stand and things like that. For me personally, I'm hiring experienced people that I trust, and I try to give them the tools to succeed. So usually when I'm checking in with people and talking with them about the work, like that's how I'll naturally find out like what the status is of something.
And right now, everybody is remote, right?
Yes, the entire company is remote. The company went remote first about a year ago. And yeah, we don't have a headquarters.
And how do you feel about it?
I mean, I love it. I like it a lot. The company was originally based out of San Francisco. And when I was starting, being full-time remote, it was on my mind. And then the entire world went remote. And I think I like it. It's good. I think it allows people to really focus on a nice work-life balance, choose the life and move and be flexible like that. And when the entire company is committed to it, it works quite well.
And what about remote synchronous work?
Yeah, I think also asynchronous work becomes very natural based on having multiple time zones. If you're on the East Coast, usually you have quiet mornings, or in the West Coast, so they have quiet end of days, and the middle of the days are usually where the meetings happen. So everyone just tries to work and lean into naturally.
Do you think that documentation helps in this case?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone in our team is more or less like from New York to, on the creative team, from, you know, New York to Hawaii. So we use Slack, and when things need to be updated and communicated, I think they're done fairly quickly. There's always this existential battle with the calendar as a designer and as a cross-functional team and protecting the creative time. And honestly, I think some of the time zone difference like really helps nicely, because it can offer you pockets of focused time that people can plan against and be like, okay, here's my meetings, be more strategic there, here's my working time, type of thing.
Yeah. Do you have these time slots for creative work?
Yeah, definitely. Like in the mornings are definitely like a great time for me. Just it's quiet. I can like set everything up nicely and just get going.
And how do you plan your time in general?
The first half, my mornings are devoted to deeper, more creative work, while the afternoons are probably meetings and working with individuals. In the afternoon, me and my wife have a newborn child, so then it's like home to the baby and running with that.
That's nice.
Yeah.
And I think it's great when you are working remotely, you can combine it.
Exactly.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's quite hard to build connections in the team, especially with new members, to somehow create a culture where people want to collaborate and not just work as freelancers. So do you think it can be started, let's say, by management, or it, it's something that is evolving naturally from the center of the company?
I think it can be done. I think culture is what you do, not what you say. So I think you have to naturally lead by example. So it has to come from within and has to be top down, has to be demonstrated. But in a remote world, there are mechanics to build empathy, build context, contextual awareness, build inspiration. There's tenets of the creative team that people having empathy, people having context, people having inspiration. Those are things that, like, I believe a good creative team should have a constant influx of. You should be feeding all the time. So you don't have to necessarily be together to get that type of culture. I mean, you do get in person, it's just a different type of dynamic. But when growing a team and trying to build some culture, design culture, I think it can be done. The things that I was just mentioning about of how to like build that empathy, that context, those are things that you can still do through Zoom. You can still give context to people. You can still build connections so that someone understands where other people are coming from. You can still do that all remotely. Those culture, you know, very much like how the team is empowered to say no or to say yes, or how they think about, those are all parts of culture. I think all that can be fostered remotely through Zooms.
What was one of the latest projects that you can talk about, launched project?
I think most recently we launched a Summer of Sex campaign, which is a landing page, ads, and all this merchandising different bundles in our sexual health category. So that's a recent example of a very cross-functional just campaign work in terms of building that aesthetic, building that vibe, and having that vibe permeate all the different touch points, email, social, web, .com. I think there's that. And then on the HERS side, we just launched the HERS hair quiz, which has been super exciting. It's a quiz that you can personalize results by answering questions. It's performing quite well. It's just nice, beautiful product design. The homepage of HERS was redone recently as well. Much more like storytelling, much more cinematic, much more emotional with the photography. So yeah.
And normally, how do you plan this project?
I think there a lot of stuff are driven key product launches and when products are launching, and we use that as a backbone. We plan quarterly and then we work backwards. So to give ourselves ample time, the time that's needed to deliver.
Yeah. I think you are at the stage when you can plan quarterly, and these plans are still true because if you're more early stage, it's impossible.
Yeah, exactly. You want to plan, but you don't want to plan too far ahead, and you want to still be able to be nimble and agile. And a lot of times it's good to know where you're going, but it's also like important to go a little left when needed.
And speaking about the planning and project launches, I mean, do you have user research before such projects, or it is ongoing user research and you didn't plan it for?
No, user research is ongoing. We have an insights team that are phenomenal, and insights and customer insights are usually the crux of what the strategies are based around. So a lot of, even with the Summer of Sex, was based on an insight based on how customers are behaving in the market and what we're hearing from our customers and things like that. So I think a lot of that, another testament to just Hims and HERS being so like very customer centric and really talking to and listening and iterating with our customers. That's something that we have in-house as well, so that those learnings can be applied cross-functionally to different marketers or different designers or different engineers.
It's curious that UX research is a separate function and it's not inside the small design teams.
Yeah, right now at the stage where we have product designers, which are a mixture of UX and UI, or structural and visual. Right now, it's very much about owning the category and evolving the category holistically. And what I find working with experienced product designers, they like to do both because it lets them work holistically. Yeah, and all the product designers have different strengths and different fortes. So it works nicely when the product designer on hair might have this strength, the product designer on skin might lean this way. So when they're talking to each other, like it creates a natural environment for like, hey, collaboration and critique and feedback. So yeah, and it just also helps build a more diverse and dynamic team.
Yeah. I totally understand this. Speaking about the design processes, so let's say we plan the project, we understand who will be doing UX research, let's say product designer. And the next step is to actually plan the deadlines, the timelines. So do you use frameworks?
When it comes to product design and product iteration on our core product, there's a concept of, which I love, they're constantly deploying and they're just taking the time it takes to get done. There's that on the product side. On the marketing side, I think it's a little bit more deadline driven of, we'll work back from a launch date. There's a very scalable process that we go through to launch pages on our .com. So we're very familiar with when photos need to be done and when, but we're also very familiar with what rules can be broken and what things we can skip depending on what type of launch it is. There's the marketing initiatives, the campaigns, and then there's the constant product iteration and deployment. So one is a little bit more iterative and agile. The other one is a little bit more structured, but at the same time, it's definitely very collaborative.
Yeah, I see. Okay, and going to the final part of the project. So we are trying to measure the success.
Yeah, the thing I love about Hims and Hers is we're very clear in the beginning what the KPIs are. Before anything is started, we communicate the KPIs quite early. Culturally, we do a great job at that. And that's important because, like I said, it's usually the key driver on what our strategy will be. If that's the goal, like how do we get there? That's our strategy. How we get there is the strategy. It's important to define the why for every engagement for all the team members. And that helps paint a picture of what success looks like for the entire team, which in turn builds a lot of empathy among the team members. Constraints gets creativity going, and I'm a fan of that. And our goal, KPI, you mix that with reality of how much time, how much resources, and then that usually provides a nice sandbox for us to work within. So a lot of initiatives are very like, okay, like we're doing this to get these goals. And I always like to say to all the designers, once again, we're in the applied arts. Our design needs to put up numbers. It needs to push us to the goal in a beautiful, simple, unexpected way that no other company could do. And the numbers need to reflect that. Maybe not all the time, but at certain times, like to know when they do and when they don't is something that we're constantly talking about and how we're judging the success of things. But having an open dialogue and, you know, having dashboards that track things and creates transparency. So it's very fun.
Yeah. And what was your most favorite project so far in Hims? The most challenging, maybe.
All of them have been my favorite. They're all challenging in different respects. One of the product launches, the concealer for men, was, you know, pretty just amazing in terms of like the product, the vibe, destigmatizing makeup for men. Thought I really walked the walk there. So that was super nice. All the work that's been done with Hers Hair over the past 6 months has been really, really proud of that work and the team. Just the work that they've done there to give Hers Hair an essence and a tone and a personality. That business has been around for about 2 years, and it's much smaller than the Hims business, and it's still finding its way. And now we're trying to turn the corner to, you know, really understand what that business is, how it can serve customers, and what it should look like and talk like. And how it looks most recently is very emblematic where it's going, and it looks beautiful, it feels smart, it feels trustworthy, and I think that's a very hard thing to achieve.
It's great that you mentioned makeup for men project. Mm-hmm. I was surprised when I saw it. What was the initial idea behind it?
I mean, it's kudos to our product development team and the insight and that squad. Our role as a creative team was to bring it to life in a way that destigmatized, that felt approachable, but yet on brand, that we didn't want to fall into tropes. We wanted to appeal to a wide type of man, but we also wanted to have a POV on the product. And when you look at the product photography and the type of photography and how we presented it, it is quite differentiated in the category. I don't think this is a product that's unfamiliar to the majority of male customers, and this might be the first time they shop for makeup for themselves. Trying to achieve a nice balance of this will look beautiful on your countertop, but it will also get the job done.
That's a risky bet project because obviously nobody really explored this topic before.
Yeah, it was in collaboration with Alex Rodriguez. He used it and he was the spark working with him and his team. He was a celebrity and they use makeup and it's normal for them. But he was kind of like, hey guys, like you should all use this. It's like super simple. He gave us the confidence plus, you know, the market insight. So yeah, we were both betting together.
And I have a few fast fire questions to you, maybe more sure. Personal. So in the past year, what new behavior or habit has most improved your life?
My most behavioral habit has probably been like reading. I think I'm just reading a lot more just because like you're home, you're in a small environment, and like to do something else. I think that emerges something. I was always into it, but I just got more into it during the pandemic.
What's the most useful piece of feedback you received in the past month, year?
Better communication. Like never assume. Like there's been times where like I've assumed and I should just, you can never assume, always give the context. So I think that's been like, once again, just reminding me of that has been some feedback.
You are talking about assuming in a team or?
Just assuming someone knows context about something or that's, it's a lot, so much, we're dealing in a subjective field and it's a lot of communication. So there's a lot that can be assumed, especially when you can't point to things. So it's just very much about like never assuming and always providing context. And I think sometimes people can feel like blindsided without context. So I think trying to prevent that is always something that I want to do.
Do you have your personal roadmap? How do you want to see yourself in a year, 2 years, 5 years?
I do not have a personal roadmap. I'm less that type. I love what I'm doing. I think we're doing phenomenal work as a company. I think there's a lot of room for growth. So I'm very excited and I'm a new father. So I'm very excited about that as well.
It actually brings me to the question, because I'm pretty sure that this was not your answer a few years ago. So how did the definition of success change over the course of past years?
Yeah, I think success, at least it has changed. It's that work-life balance. Success is being able to control your work-life balance based on how you want to throttle it. It was a version of that 5 years ago. It's more so a version of that now, but it's just being in control of your destiny and being able to do things that interest you. And I think that just makes successful. I think that, and then you can, if you're a family man, you can lean into that. You just it puts yourself in the driver's seat. And I think that is successful.
Yeah, that's nice. Nice definition. But when do you feel like maybe tired and not having enough energy? What do you do? Because obviously it's not always work-life balance, not always success.
Yeah. It's how do we recharge, how do we regain? I recharge like alone. I think whether it's like in the gym or just going for walks or just watching TV, I can try to recharge that way. I always try to have quiet time to like really take a deep breath and prioritize and really just try to get focused. A lot of times when I feel overwhelmed, I try to focus on stacking up small wins, and that will be the quickest thing that will turn me around.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Leave your reviews and subscribe not to miss updates. Bye.